fully fit. For 2 whole days we rested and gorged ourselves on food and sunshine, preparing for the west face of Siula Grande. I began to feel spasms of fear now that we were committed to the next fine weather window. What if something were to go wrong? I could see how very much alone we had chosen to be and felt small. Touching the void is only in part, perhaps, the story of a first descent. When we left Richard the next morning to climb up onto the glacier at the foot of Siula Grande's west face, we had embarked on perhaps the greatest and most pitiless challenge of our lives. The ascent, made over 2 exhausting days, was not without danger or excitement. To be nearly plucked from a sheer face by rock and ice falls, to snowhole on near vertical faces, is doubtless a tale all its own. But for Simon and I, it was but the prelude to a far greater challenge, an ordeal which would lead us to face the most difficult decisions of our lives. In quite separate circumstances, we were to face a stark choice, that of life over death. A decision that, once taken, we would follow remorselessly to the very end of our strength. It is the story of this ordeal that we take up now, on the morning of the 3rd day, poised for the summit. Poised, too, for a far greater test. A test which we would never have sought voluntarily. It had been a long and bitterly cold night at 20,000 feet, perhaps nearer 21,000. The flutings lay ahead and it was my turn to lead. To make things more difficult, I had to exit the cave and somehow climb over the roof, which stretched the full width of the gully. I succeeded, but not without destroying most of the cave and burying Simon, who had belayed me from inside. The sky was clear and there was no wind, but daylight had dubious advantages. It made the climbing easier and allowed me to see whether I was about to slip. On the other hand, it provided unnerving glimpses between my legs of 4,500 feet of emptiness. Knowing that our belays were anything but secure and that any fall would be disastrous made me concentrate on the way ahead. As I approached the dead end in the gully, the angle steadily increased, and it became obvious that I would have to traverse out through the side flutings soon. But which one? I could see that the flutings were not as high near the cave, and that Simon might be able to see more of the way ahead than I could.
Which way should I go? Can you see anything?
Don't go left.
Why?
It seems to drop away and it looks bloody dangerous.
What's on the right?
Can't see, but the flutings are not so steep. It's a lot better than the left, anyway.
To my surprise, digging furiously with both axes into the fluting was no harder than climbing the gully, and I emerged, breathing hard, on the other side, in an identical steepening gully above which I could see the huge cornice of the summit only a rope's length away. Simon floundered up to me and whooped when he saw the summit behind me.
"Cracked it," he said.
"I hope so, but this last bit looks bloody steep."
"It'll go."
He set off up the slope, churning huge amounts of snow down onto my exposed belay hole. I pulled my hood over my helmet and turned my back, gazing down at the glacier far below me. Suddenly our exposed stance appalled me. The loose snow was so steep and my belay so precarious that I felt a sickening disbelief in what we were doing. An excited yell tore me from my thought and I turned to see the rope disappearing over the top of the gully above.
"Done it! No more flutings, come up!"
He was sitting, legs astride a fluting, grinning manically when I pulled myself wearily out of the gully. Behind him, less than 50 feet from us, the summit cornice reared up in a threatening bulge of snow ice which overhung the west face. I quickly moved past Simon and cramponed on firm snow up and to the left, where the summit cornice was smallest. 10 minutes later, I stood beneath the snow ridge dividing west face from east. Simon joined me, and we laughed happily as we took off our sacks and sat on them, carelessly dropping axes and mitts in the snow, content to be quiet a while and look around us.
"Let's leave the sacks here and go up to the summit," Simon said, interrupting my reverie.
"The summit? Of course. I'd forgotten we'd only reached the ridge." Escaping from the west face, it seemed to be an end in itself. I looked up at the ice cream cone rising behind Simon. It was only about 100 feet away.
"You go ahead. I'll take some photos when you reach the top."
We took the customary summit photos and ate some chocolate.